Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Avodah Zarah, Daf Lamed Dalet. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara on Daf Lamed Dalet that we will be beginning with starts a few lines from the top. In the inside margin, namely to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text between the Gemara and the Rashi, one will notice an abbreviated Rabbi Akiva. It's encircled, Reish Ayin, with a vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the lines that are opposite this vertical dashed line correspond to an incident concerning Rabbi Akiva. On the outside margin, we provide a topic heading. You can see the Nosei, Gimel She'elos, three questions, Shishalu l'Rabbi Akiva, the Lo Have Biyodei, the Osa Shah Bei Midrasha. There are three questions that Rabbi Akiva was asked, and he did not have the answer for those questions. He came to the Beis Medrash, to the place of study, and the questions were answered over there. Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara continues, Rabbi Akiva Ikla Leginzak. He arrived or went to Ginzak, the name of a place. Ba'umine, they asked of him, number one, Mis'anin L'shois, so Ein Mis'anin L'shois. This deals with Hilchus Tainus, with fasting. Let us imagine that a person woke up one morning and did not eat until midday. And at midday, he decides to makabel on himself, to accept upon himself a fast, namely from midday till sundown. Does that constitute a fast or not? And there are halachas, there are laws that govern his being considered in an official fasting capacity. So, does that constitute an official fast or not? So, the Gemara says, Lo have biyodei. The question was, Mis'anin l'shos or ein mis'anin l'shos, and Lo have biyodei means he didn't have it. In other words, he didn't have an answer for that. Number two, Kankanim shel ovdei kechovim asurin o mutorin. The vessels of idol worshippers, these are vessels that had stored Yayin Nesech, the idolatrous wine in it. Are they allowed? Are the vessels allowed or forbidden? Lo have biyodei, and he didn't have an answer for that. Bameh shimesh Moshe kol shivas yemei hamiluim. Moshe Rabbeinu served as the Kohen Gadol during the 7 days that led up to the official consecration of the Mishkan. That week that preceded the official consecration and of the Mishkan were called the Shivas Yemei Hamiluim. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was serving as the Kohen Gadol. He was officiating there. Even though, technically speaking, Moshe Rabbeinu was not a Kohen, and certainly not a Kohen Gadol, nevertheless, during those 7 days, he had that title. So, the question is, what garments did he use? That's the question of Bamesh Shimesh. What garments was he wearing? Was he wearing the official Kohen garments or something else? Loi have biyodei. And that, too, was something that Rabbi Akiva had no answer for. Also, Shaw Bei Midrasha, he came and raised and presented the question to the Beis Medrash, to the place of study. Amri, they answered, number one, and the numbering that we have here corresponds to the numbering that we just saw in the Gemara. Hilchasa, Mis'anin L'shois, the halacha is that there is such an institution of Tainis L'shois, namely one who did not eat from the beginning of the day, and at midday accepted upon himself that for the balance of the day he would be in a, he would experience as an official faster. So there is such a thing. V'im hishlim, if he finishes the day like that, mispal tfilas tainis, that it is toward the end of the day when the mincha davening comes up, he will say the anenu davening. The anenu passage will be added into his shmona esrei. That's the term tfilas tainis. And the anenu passage that one says is features in it the expression biyom Tsom Tanisenu, during our fast. So he's considered an official faster, so to speak. Number two, V'hilchaso kankanim shel oivdei kichovim v'achar yud beis chodesh mutorim. The vessels of the idol worshippers, if they're left unused, empty and unused for 12 months, they will become allowed. Rashi adds here that if a person wants to use it sooner than that, he can. There is an option by using one of the procedures that we have been exposed to earlier in this perek, namely filling it up and leaving it full of water for 24 hours, spilling it out, and repeating that process for a total of 3 times. That's called milui v'ilui. Continuing in the Gemara, number 3, Bameh Shimesh Moshe Shivas Yemei HaMiluim, and what was Moshe Rabbeinu wearing during the 7 days leading up to the setting, the official start of the base of the Mishkan? Becholuk Lovan, a white type of garment. Rav Kahana Masni, Rav Kahana explains, Becholuk Lovan She'ein Bo Imra. It was a smooth type of white robe that had no border to it. Hacharsanim v'azagim shel oivdei kichovim. The Mishnah made reference to the charsanim and zagim. One translation that would that's appropriate for these expressions are the seeds and the skins of grapes. Grapes that were used in the making of wine. So the skins and the grape skins and grape seeds of goyim, of the idol worshippers. The Mishnah pointed out that according to Rebbe Meir, they are forbidden for having benefit from them. The Chachamim made a distinction between lachin, damp ones, and dry ones. Tonu Rabbanan, Hacharzonim v'hazokim shel oivdei kichovim, lachim asurin, yaveshin mutorin. This is the shita that we saw in the Mishnah under the name of the Chachamim. The lachim are the damp ones, are asur, and for the forbidden, and the yaveshin, the dry ones, are allowed. Hey ninu lachim v'hei ninu yaveshin. What constitutes lach and what constitutes yovesh? Omar Rav Yudah Mashmuel, lachin equals kol yud beis chodesh. That those grape seeds and skins that remain for 12 months since they were pressed, those are considered lachim, damp. Yaveshim equals achar yud beis chodesh. After they've been sitting around for 12 months, then they're considered yovesh. Itmar, Omar Rabba Babachana, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Keshein Asurin, when we say that they are usur, Asurin Afilu Bahano, they're usur to derive even benefit from, let alone eat them. Keshein Mutorin, when they reach the Yovesh stage, when we say they're mutar, Mutorin Afilu Bahilo, one can even consume them. Omar Rav Zvid, Hai Durdayo de Chamro Darmoi. Durdaya, Rashi says, are shmorim. These would be the grape sediment, the grape lees that are found at the bottom of a barrel of wine. So, if you have some Gentile wine, and they remain for a period of 12 months, that's boser, the halachier says that the Durdaya, the Chamro, the Armoi are the Gentiles, the grape leaves, the Chamro is the wine of the Armoi, Boser, Tracer, Yarchi, Shosa, after 12 months, Shori, they are allowed. Omar of Chaviva Brei Derava Hani Gulfi Boser Treser Yarchi Shasa Shari. Before we go further, we should note on the outside margin we have a Nosei Mivneh, where you see the double underline that we're experiencing right now is explained Sidra Shavvarim Shemutar Acharei Yud Beis Chodesh. This represents a series of things that are permissible after 12 months. So the gulfi, hani gulfin, these are receptacles of the goyim that were holding wine. So Boser Treser Yarchi Shasi, after 12 months of a year, shari, they are permissible. Amar Rav Chaviva, hani avto detai. This is also a receptacle made of leather. Boser Treser Yarchi Shasa shari, after 12 months, they are permissible. The Rashi points out on the top line, detai, there's a reference to holchei drachim, nosim oso. Travelers use these vessels, these avta, for carrying their wine. They nosin oso mole yain lemerachok. They carry wine in these for great distances. V'havi kemachnisa lekium, and they are considered storage vessels. U'mishum hachi boi shio yud beis chodesh, and because they are considered storage vessels, we require a 12-month non-use, a 12-month period of non-use. So since they were used for wine storage, after for a period of 12 months when they are unused, they then become permissible. Amar of Acha Breder of Ika, Hani Purtsini Darmoi. Purtsini, Rashi says, Psoilus Shelanovin. It's a residue of grapes. Boser Tresa Yarchi Shosa Shori. After 12 months, they are permissible. The Tosfos on Omid Aleph points out that the Purtsini is the thing that we referred to earlier as the Chartzanim, and the Chartzanim we saw were grape seeds after the grapes were pressed. So this is the same thing. And there we also saw 12 months. Omar Rav Acha Brei Derava Hani Gulfi. The Gulfi, we saw this expression also at the bottom line of Omid Aleph. Here, the Gemara makes a color reference to them. Shchimi v'uchmi Boser Treser Yarchi Shosa Shori. Whereas these are colors of material, dark ground, dark material, dark earth material that served as the raw material in making these gulfi. It might be noteworthy that the first time we saw gulfi, namely on Omid Aleph at the bottom, the presenter was Rav Chaviva Brei Derava. Here we have Rav Acha Brei Derava presenting his version of the gulfi, and where he gets into the detail concerning the color of them. So if it's made with this type of this material, earth, this color earth, shchimi and uchmi. Uchmi is black, shchimi is some type of also dark ground material. After 12 months, they will become, which are 12 months of non-use. V'hamurias, tono rabbanan, murias uman mutar. The murias prepared by a professional is considered kosher. The murias was made from fish entrails, and they were generally speaking for good quality murias for was made from kosher variety fish. Therefore, there's no fear of the lack of kashrus from the fish aspect, because only kosher variety fish were used for preparing the murias. And since he's an uman, since he's a professional, he doesn't add wine to improve it. Rashi points this out on the third line from the top, murias uman, shel ovi kechavim, shel ovi kechavim uman mutar, a non-Jewish professional murias preparer is permissible. Murius lo avdi midogim tameim. The murius was not prepared from the entrails and fats of unkosher fish. Umishum chamra klasrinole. And in general, the reason we forbid murius of Gentiles is because they add wine to it. For uman lo romi be chamra unforsh veozil. The professional doesn't add wine to it, as will be explained in the Gemara. Aidi dinof veshumne. Pam Rishon Vesheni Mekalkel Lehu Chamra. Since they have a lot of fats to it, so during the, we'll call it the first and second rounds, extracting the fats, the addition of wine to them would be injurious, would be no good, would ruin it. The Brisa continues, Rabbi Huda ben Gamliel Omer, Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Af Chilik Uman Muter. The Chilik of a professional preparer, non-Jewish, would be allowed. Now, the Chilik is a name of a fish, a type of fish that is of a kosher variety. It's also referred to, Rashi points out, by the term, another name for them is sultanis. In general, the chilik is a type of fish. When sold, if you were not dealing with an uman, one might be suspicious about its kashrus. And the reason for that is that when they would catch chilik, another kind of fish that was unkosher would accompany it, would be found together with it. That kind of fish is called irvuna. And the irvuna fish looks a lot like the chilik fish. But since he is an uman, since he's a professional, he knows how to distinguish between the two. And the unkosher, the irvuna, tends to ruin the taste of the sultanis. So therefore, since he's an uman and he wants you to enjoy the best quality, the best taste, he'll know how to separate the chilik, which is the acceptable variety, the one that was sold, and he would separate the irvuna from it. Continuing in the Gemara, Toni Avimi Breder Rabbi Avo, Murias Uman Mutter. Who Tani La, Vahu Omar La. Avimi quotes the Tanaic source. Actually, it's what we saw just two lines above that Murias Uman is Mutter, but he also, not only does he teach that, but he also explains. Pam Rishayin Vesheni Mutter, Shlishi Osir. The nature of preparation of this involved taking the fish entrails and adding water and salt to them. On the fish fats, and the water and salt would absorb the fats from it, and then they would pour it off, and when they reached a certain level, and then they would do this a second time, adding the water and salt to the fish fats, and then pour that off. That would be the Rishon and Sheni. That's mutter, because the fat level, the richness of this substance, murius, was so rich that there was no need to add any additives, namely wine, to improve it. However, once you got to the third round, then you cannot you can't buy the third round murius from the Gentile. So my time. Oh, why is that? So the Gemara answers based on our explanation. We'll understand the Gemara. Pam Rishon Vesheni. The first and second rounds, the nafish shunayo, nafish means a lot of shunayo fats. Lo tzorich lemirmi b'chamra. There's no need to pour over them any wine. The taste and quality will be so good. You don't need any of that. You don't need the wine additive. However, mikan v'elech, from the third round onwards, rama b'chamra. They do add wine to it, and that's what makes it forbidden. Hahu arba de muryasa de asu de asi l'nemeila de ako. There was an arba boat full of murias, of fish fats, that came asi, that came to the nemeila, the port of Akko. Akko was a port city. Oisiv Rabbi Abba de Min Akko, Neturi Bahada. Rabbi Abba from Akko set up guards to watch it. Omar Lay. Omar Lay Rava. Ad ho idno ma natra. Until now, who was watching it? In other words, you're setting up guards to supervise the kashrus, the acceptability of what is, of what's there. But until now, it was on high seas; no one was watching it. So, Omar Lay, so Rabbi Abba de Min Akko answers, Ad ho idno lemai nechushla. Up till now, what was there to worry about? If there was some kind of fear of them adding wine to the murias, there is no such fear. Kista is a quantity. It's a name of a measure. Kista de murias be luma. A luma is a type of currency. It's a that's the amount of money that one would pay. One luma for a kista de murias. Kista de chamra, a measure, the same measure of wine, the dalad lumi, would cost you 4 lumi. So it would be of no financial benefit for them to add more expensive wine to the less expensive murias. It'd be sort of and then what happens is they'll end up selling it at a murias price. People who were interested were coming to buy murias, and they're paying for murias, not for wine. So you wouldn't take the more expensive additive of wine and add it to the murias, and then end up getting less money for it. Amale Rabbi Yirmiya, Rabbi Zera, Dilma Aidi Tzur Asu. Maybe the boats came from Tuako via Tzur. Tzur was a coastal location. North of Akko, so maybe the boats came via Tzur, the Shavi Chamra, where wine is very cheap. So there is room to suspect that maybe they added wine to their murias. Amale, so Rabbi Zera says, he was asked the question by Rabbi Yirmiya, so he answers, they wouldn't come, boats that are in Akko would not have come via Tzur, because it would have been a dangerous journey. Hasan ikuli upshuri ika. The Rashi explains, ikuli upshuri ika, mayim shahochim akalson, there's water that has a flow, a crooked type of flow, upshuri, may shlogim nifsharim alsvasa mayim, a snow melt. There was a snow melt on the shore. The ain moshchei hasfina yecholim lavo ba'oisa derech, and the people that would draw the boats for certain types of seafaring journeys, the boats would travel very close to shore with very long ropes extending from the boat to the shoreline, and people and animals would draw the ropes along the shore, enabling the boat to travel. And since there was this snow melt on the shore, it was impossible to traverse the shoreline with the boat. So, in simple, the boats that arrived in Akko did not come via Tzur, and therefore there was no suspicion that cheap Tzur wine was added to the murias. Gvinas beis unyaki. The Mishnah made reference to this kind of cheese that is as also being forbidden. Omar Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish. Before we go further, we can just glance at the outside margin. We have a topic heading in Osei. Lomo ne'asar gvinoi space in Yaki bahano lefi Rabbi Meir. Why, according to Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, were these cheeses forbidden to even benefit from? So the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish, Mipnei ma osru gvinas unyaki. Why did Rabbi Meir forbid deriving benefit from these cheeses? Answer: Mipnei shiroiv agolim shel oisoir nishchotin lavoidas kechavim. The problem there was the majority of calves of that community were slaughtered with idolatrous intent. They were slaughtered with the intent of serving thereby the idols. And the cheese was made from the milk found in their stomachs. The agolim would nurse from their mother cows, and the milk that was found inside their stomachs was used to harden the cheeses there. So you're essentially you have cheese whose one of its important ingredients is something that is of an idolatrous origin. My Iria, the Gemara asks, My Iria Roiv Agolim, why was it necessary to teach that the majority of calves were used for idolatrous purposes and thereby giving rise to the prohibition? Afilu miut nami, even if a minority of the calves, you would still have a problem. The whole Rebbe Meir, Chayish Lemiuta. We know that Rebbe Meir, whom we are right now investigating, he takes into consideration minority amounts as well. So the Gemara now provides an answer. You'll notice the answer takes a few lines to develop. As you can see from the long answer marking, the encircled tuft to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text and a vertical dashed line. The Gemara answers why it's important to explain that the majority of calves were slaughtered for idolatrous purposes. E amris roiv, if you say rove of the calves, then eko miut, we will thereby have a true minority that would give rise for Rebbe Meir to be suspect. This will be explained very shortly in the Gemara. But at this point, it sounds a little cryptic. It means if you have a majority of calves, that will produce a true minority. We'll see minority means of total animals. Ela e amris miut. If, however, you would say that a miut of calves were slaughtered for idolatrous purposes, and as a result of that minority of calves, Rebbe Meir forbids, that would not really be the case. If you were to say, like we just suggested, that only a minority were slaughtered for the idol, you would then have a majority of calves not slaughtered for the idol. The Iko Nami Sha'ar Behemos, the Ainish Chotan Lavos Gehovim, and then you have the other realm of total behemos of animals that were not used in idol service. It's obvious from this that the only animals used for idol service, idol worship, were the slaughtering of calves. But if you had only a minority of the calves, then you would have a situation where, first of all, you've got a majority of calves not used for avodas kohavim, and then you've got the bulk of other animals that were not used for idol worship. Then how would we view the calves that were used for idol worship? Havile miuta de miuta would have been a minority of a minority. It's a minority of calves, and it is a minority of the other total animals. Ulemiuta de miuta loy chayish Rebbe Meir. And as far as a minority of a minority, that is something that even Rebbe Meir does not take into account. The Gemara at this point raises a question. You'll notice from the markings, we have a long question marking, the kuf that's encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical dashed line. Amalei Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim, Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish. Ki nishchotin lavodis kechovim, mai have, even if they are slaughtered for idolatrous purposes, like you, Rabbi Shimon ben Lokish, suggested in the answer that we just saw, let us just restate that. Rabbi Shimon Eliyakim is turning to Reish Lakish. It might be noteworthy that Reish Lakish is the one, Rabbi Shimon Eliyakim is the one that raised the original question as to why the cheese of the Beis Inyaki is forbidden, and the answer that was given was because they were slaughtered, the rove of them were slaughtered for Avodas Kehavim. Now, upon that, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim is asking Reish Lakish, so what? So what that they were slaughtered for idolatrous purposes? My have the ha'at hu deshari. But you are the one that allows it anyway. What do we mean that Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish allows it? So what we see in our Gemara markings, we have a brackets that appears now in the Gemara. In fact, if you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll see two types of brackets. We call this a situation you've got a brackets in a brackets. So we have this this marking, and it's explained in the outside margin. We have a star, and you'll see there it says Hezber Hasograim. Lifnei Hasograim Histayim Ikur Hakusha. Right now, the main question has been completed, has been raised. Namely, how is it that you are forbidding just because the animals were slaughtered for the Avodah Zarah, but you allow such things? Besoch Hasograim Nimtza Horeka Lakusha. Within the brackets that we have here, the Gemara will present the background to the question. So let us now, being that we see the structure of the Gemara, the Iker, the main question is ended already. And after this bracketed section will begin the answer to the Gemara, where you can see Omar Leh. If you skip a few lines down, you'll see it says Omar Leh. That's Reish Lakish answering the question. But in the meantime, we now go to we start the Gemara, we continue with the bracketed section. The Gemara just asked, whereas Reb Shimon ben Eliyakim asked, but aren't you the one that allows animals that were nishchat l'avodas kehavim? The itmar, ha-sheichet es ha-behema lizroik doma l'avodas kehavim, l'haktir chelba l'avodas kehavim. Just one more note of introduction. There is an assumption in the question that we are raising that animals, when we speak about them slaughtered for idolatrous purposes, the main way of serving idols was either by sprinkling the blood of the animal for the idol or offering the fats of the animal to the idol. In other words, in the mere act of slaughtering, as far as the question is concerned, that was not itself a service of the idol. That I'm emphasizing is as far as we are concerned right now in the question. So that what was the service of the idol? The service of the idol was the sprinkling of the blood or the offering of its fats. So, is there a problem in the act of slaughtering the animal? So, that having been said, if you now see we have these internal brackets. We'll skip them momentarily because the feature is Rabbi Yochanan's Shita, but we're analyzing right now Reish Lakish's Shita. And afterwards it says, Reb Shimon ben Lakish Omar Muteris, that an animal that was slaughtered with an intent to sprinkle its blood for the idol. At the point that it's slaughtered, is the animal forbidden? So Reish Lakish says, no, the animal's not forbidden. The act of slaughtering itself is not a problem. He wasn't slaughtering it for the idol. He was slaughtering it with an intent to do a subsequent act for the idol. That's called mechashvin me'avoda la'avoda. Thoughts during one act with an intention for another act. Reish Lakish says that doesn't render the animal forbidden. Therefore, if an egel in that community was slaughtered with this type of intent, slaughtered with the intent to sprinkle its blood for the Avodah Zarah, if I then take the milk from its stomach, that milk is not a problem. The animal, by its merely being slaughtered with the intent of doing a subsequent act for the Avodah Zarah, doesn't forbid the animal. Let's go over this again with the bracketed section that we skipped. We spoke about someone slaughtering a behema with the purposes of sprinkling the blood for the idol or offering its fats to the idol. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Asura, that the animal at the mere point of slaughtering becomes forbidden. Kosovar, because he is of the opinion, Mechashvin Me'avoda L'Avoda, that there is this concept of thoughts
from one avoda, from one service, in this case the slaughtering, li avoda, for another act. In other words, and the thought that you have concerning the second act while doing the first act will take hold. The alfinon chutz mipnim, and we learn laws concerning chutz, concerning idolatry, from laws concerning the Beis HaMikdash. It may be pointed out that in the pnim, the Beis HaMikdash is called inside the pnim, there certainly was a phenomenon of mechashen me'avoda l'avoda. That's a negative situation where, let us say, a person slaughters an animal with the intent of sprinkling the dam of the korban of the sacrifice at a location other than the mizbeach, or it's outside the azorah, or he slaughters a sacrifice with the intention of offering it up at the wrong time. That's what happens, and that, in other words, that's a problem. That's a mindset, that's a thought that takes hold in the Beis HaMikdash. The question is, do we learn idol worship from, do we learn laws of idol worship from that which took place in the Beis HaMikdash? Continuing in the Gemara, Reb Shimon ben Lokish Omar Muteres. We don't learn the laws of idol worship from that which takes place in the Beis HaMikdash, and hence, thoughts during Shechita concerning the subsequent act of idolatry wouldn't ruin the Shechita. Therefore, the animal, even if it were slaughtered with this idolatrous intent, would not become forbidden. And hence, the milk found inside the stomach of the calf should not be grounds for forbidding it behano. Omar Lay, Suresh Lokish says back, Tarmincha Shaitcha. Tarmincha is, or Laharim is raised, your mazel. In other words, you have good luck. I will give you now an explanation to your question. The Omer, the case that where the Shechita does forbid the animal, is where the person, the idol worshipper, declares Bigmar Zvicha Hu Ovda, that upon the completion of the slaughtering, it is with the slaughtering itself, with the completion of the slaughtering itself, that I declare my service to the idol. So if that were the case, where this is, it's just an exceptional case, we'll have to say, it's not the common situation, but given a case where that's what they practice, where in that community, we'll say, they announce that they are serving their idol with upon the completion of the slaughtering itself. In other words, their intention is to serve their idol with the slaughtering. In other words, without waiting for a subsequent act of worship or sprinkling of, or the, namely sprinkling or offering of fats, with the act of slaughtering itself, they have idolatrous intent. That is what makes the animal forbidden b'hano. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Shaul Rabbi Yishmael. In our Mishnah, we saw Rabbi Yishmael posing the question of the cheeses to Rabbi Yeshua. Omar Rav Achtavuye bar Omar Rav. The Gemara opens up with what seems to be unrelated to the Mishnah itself, but in the course of the Gemara we will see the tie-in. Before we go further, let's take advantage of our nosei, our topic heading that's found in the outside margin. Rav Mechalik Bekidushe Isha Bein HaMekatsho Beferesh Shel, and we have Aleph Shor HaNiskal Dimekudeshes, and Beis L'Shel Egle Avodes Kechovim She'eno Mekudeshes. Rav will make a distinction concerning the realm of money or value offered to a woman in marriage, whereby a person has to give value to a woman in order to marry her. Generally speaking, we do it with with kesef or shove kesef. We do it with offering her money, or what's commonly practiced, offering her a ring, and in exchange for that, she agrees to marry the man. In this case, we'll deal with a somewhat unusual substance in offer, in the marriage offer, but it has value. We'll talk about the perish, the waste from an animal. So one case is an animal that has killed someone, and it is subsequent. It is sentenced to be stoned. That's called shor haniskal. A shor haniskal is the meat of a shor haniskal is forbidden. Is osir b'hano. We're not talking about the meat right now. We're talking about the waste of such an animal. So if a man is mekadesh a woman with the waste of a shor haniskal, we say she's mekudeshes, even though the shor haniskal itself, the meat from that animal, is forbidden to derive any benefit from. But the waste from it, she is, you can benefit from it. On the other hand, if one has a calf that was used for idolatrous purposes, the egel, the egle avodas kohavim, the waste from that is forbidden to derive benefit from. So even though we have two examples of the same category of isur hanor, namely shor haniskal and egle avodas kohavim, they're the same in that both of them, the meat of both of them, is forbidden to derive benefit from. Yet when it comes to the issue of the waste, there is a distinction. Why is that? Let's turn to the Gemara. Amarach av Ravach Devuye Amarav Hamekadesh Beperesh Shor Haniskal Mekudeshes. If one offers a woman marriage in exchange for the waste of a Shor Haniskal, animal sentenced to be stoning, so Mekudesh, she is married. Beperesh Egle Avodas Kechovim, with the waste of calves that were used in the service of idols, Eino Mekudeshes. If you like, I can give you a logical reason for the distinction, and if you like, I can give you a posuk. The Gemara now goes over this. If you prefer, if you like, I'll give you a svara. Gabi egle avodis kechavim nicho le benifche. In the case of animals used for idolatrous purposes, the owner is happy with its increased size. So anything that increases the mass of the animal, including the body wastes that are inside the animal, the owner is happy with that. Hence it becomes part of the animal insofar as the Isur Hano is concerned. He's happy with it. It contributes to his service to the idol. Avol gabi shor haniskal, when it comes to the stoned animal, the animal that needs to be stoned, lo nicho le benifche, he's not happy with the increased size of the animal. Therefore, the pirsha is not going to be considered part of the iser hano. Iboy se makro, and if you prefer, we can provide psukim for this. In the case of idolatry, it says lo yidbak biyodcha meumo. It says there should cleave unto your hands nothing from it. When it says meumo, which we've emphasized with our dashed underline, that means even the waste. Uksiv hosam, and in the case of the shor haniskal, it says sokul yisokel hashor velo yeochel es bisorai. You shall stone the animal and not eat its meat. Besoro osir ha pirsho muteris. The pasuk emphasizes the meat as being forbidden, but not its waste. The waste is muter. Omar Rava Travayu Tanini. Both of these points we see a reference to in the Mishnah itself. The reference made here is a reference that we will do through inference. On the outside margin, we have a structural note, the Mivneh. We have a diamond featured. Rava mevi hoichochois. Rava will bring proofs. L'chiluko, for his distinction, for the distinction of l'chiluko shel Rav, concerning the distinction that Rav just made between the shor haniskal and the egle avodas kechavim, miloshon mishnosenu, from the loshon of the Mishnah itself. So let's see what he does. Number one, midika omar lei v'pnei shemamidim bekevas nevela. From the fact that Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah, when explaining and when attempting to explain the prohibition of the gavinas beisun yaki, he raised the possibility, but we noticed when we learned the Mishnah that his whole answer was appeared in several stages. So, bearing that in mind, firstly, Rabbi Yeshua said, "Well, they formed the cheese using the keva of nevela, of unslaughtered animals. And Rabbi Shmuel responded to him, well, you can't tell me that the keva, which is the sour milk found inside the stomachs of nevela, is the problem, because we know the keva, the sour milk found inside the stomachs of an ola korban, of an ola sacrifice, is a stricter realm. We know that an ola korbanos are, generally speaking, the animal itself is forbidden to benefit from, whereas nevelas are something that are mutter to benefit from, and yet we know that the keva, the sour milk of the more strict realm itself, the keva itself is mutter, meaning the sour milk found inside the ola is mutter to benefit from. What do we see from that? We see from that response, Michlal, the Isure Hano Shoru Pirushayu, that in general, things that are forbidden to benefit from, like an Ola, and likewise the Shor Haniskal, their perish, the waste of those things, is mutter to benefit from. Point two, Umitiko Amarle Mitnei Shemamidim Oiso Bekevas Egle Avirizkochavim. And from the subsequent response of Rabbi Shmuel when explaining Rabbi Yeshua to Rabbi Shmuel when explaining why the cheese of Besunyaki is also, he said, well, it's because they make the cheese, they're mamidim osa, they create the cheese by using the keva, the sour milk of the calves that were used in idol worship. And once Rabbi Yehoshua said that, Rabbi Shmuel said back to him, then why is the cheese not forbidden to benefit from? So we see from the fact that Rabbi Shmuel raised that issue upon hearing about calves used in idol worship, we can conclude that the keva from idol worship animals are in fact forbidden to, the keva is forbidden to benefit from. And that was what Rav said at the bottom of Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, that the keva of Avodas Kechavim is Asur Bahano, and the keva of the Shor HaNiskal is Mutter. The Gemara now asks, why was it not said that the reason that the cheese is not osur bahano, that the reason the cheese, after Rabbi Yishmael said, well, if it's made through the cave of Avodas Kechavim, it should be osur bahano, why doesn't Rabbi Yeshua say back to him, well, I'll tell you why it's not osur bahano, because the Isur is not intact, is not perceptible. So let's read that in the Gemara now. Let Rabbi Yeshua say back to Rabbi Shmuel, Mishum delesei v'isura b'ene, the Isur is not b'ene, the Hamurius l'Rabbanan, the lo asru b'hano. We know in the case of the Murius, according to the Rabbanan, that it was not made forbidden to benefit from my time. Why was it not forbidden b'hano? Lav mishum the lesi lisur b'ene. Is it not because the wine is not b'ene? It's mixed in. So from the fact that it's something mixed in and not tangible itself, then we see that there is no isur. So why was that point not said back to Rabbi Shmuel? The Gemara answers why Rabbi Yeshua did not say that. Amri, hocha. In the case of the cheese, keva de ukme komoikim, since the keva is responsible for the solidification of the cheese, for the congealing and the solidifying of it, choshev le keman de isei le isure b'ene, it's considered as if the isur is extant, and not simply something that is absorbed into and whose identity is lost. Since it's responsible for the very existence of the cheese as cheese, it's responsible for it remaining solid and curdled, it has a higher level of prohibition than the wine in the case of the Murius, which is simply a mixed-in ingredient which loses its identity. This is called, in halacha, the term maimid. It
makes it stand. It establishes its consistency, and as a result of that, it is not botel, and the cheese is usher. And that's why the Rabbi Yehoshua did not offer as a response that the Isser is not Be'en, because as far as we're concerned, the Isser is considered Be'en. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.